The latest trend in Europe.
Hit the target and then hit the road.
From APM, American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Monday, November 7th.
Coming up, what to expect now that longtime leaders are being laid off in Europe.
A conversation with the owner of one of the largest used bookstores about the success and failure of her rivals.
And Mark Zuckerberg has a lot to like about his current situation. But, Steve, he's got some regrets as well.
Yeah, we'll have to hear about that coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
The two main political parties in Greece are meeting today to try and figure out who will replace George Papandreou as prime minister. Papandreou was the latest political victim of the debt crisis. He's going to step down from his post, though he was able to ensure that the controversial bailout package and all the budget cuts that go with it will be passed by the new government.
Well, the opposition, Jeremy, up to now has been vehemently against those big cuts. The party is called the New Democracy Party, and it's likely to take over the government soon. Simos Kevdikoglou is a member of parliament with the New Democracy Party, and he joins us now from Athens. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Why are you opposed to these austerity cuts in the parliament?
Listen, because the policy of austerity and only austerity doesn't solve the problem. It makes it bigger. Right now, I think that everybody understands we need growth and development so that we can fulfill our obligations regarding our European partners and the IMF.
Will the new unity government, you think, support this bailout and the government cuts that are proposed?
The new government is going to be a temporary government just for the time needed to implement the Brussels deal, to pass it through parliament. And after that, we will have elections as soon as possible.
So what is the New Democracy Party, your party, do to get Greece out of all this debt?
Listen, we agree with the goals set by our European partners. We want a balanced budget. We want to have a smaller public sector. But without growth and development, we won't be able to fulfill our obligations. So it's just obvious that the policy that was up to now implemented was reaching no results. It was making the problem worse.
Balancing the budget, though, and cutting the public sector, I mean, that's easier said than done, right?
Everything is easier said than done. But we believe it can be done.
Did Prime Minister Papandreou, do you think, put the country ahead of his current job?
You know, this agreement that we arrived yesterday, it could have been done on June, but Mr. Papandreou wanted to hold on to his chair. So at least now he has decided to leave his precious chair.
Simos Kevdikoglou, who's the Greek member of parliament for the opposition party New Democracy, thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Now, as we've seen throughout the debt crisis, what happens in one European country soon often happens in another. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports, what's happening to Prime Minister Papandreou might be about to happen to Italy's leader, Silvio Berlusconi.
The Greeks gave us all the words we use to talk about crisis, like disaster and catastrophe. The Romans, meanwhile, gave us a short, sharp word expressing finality. Exit, meaning he leaves. This word could soon come into play in modern Rome. Prime Minister Berlusconi could be about to quit the political stage. He has to pass the EU's controversial bailout package through his parliament, but tomorrow he faces a vote which could, as in Greece, trigger a vote of confidence. If so, he'll likely lose and be forced to resign, says Vincenzo Scarpetta of the Open Europe think tank. And if he does resign, the rest of Europe will breathe a sigh of relief.
In the eyes of Europe, in the eyes of the markets, the problem is Berlusconi. It's just a matter of credibility.
But he says even if Berlusconi does leave, the crisis seems likely to rumble on. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And let's get some perspective on all this now from our regular Monday guest, Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. She is with me here in the studio in New York this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Julia, I want to start with the words of a Greek opposition politician who spoke to Marketplace this morning. Simos Kedikoglou is a member of parliament with the New Democracy Party, and here's what he said.
This agreement that we arrived yesterday, it could have been done on June, but Mr. Papandreou wanted to hold on to his chair. So at least now he has decided to leave his precious chair.
He's decided to leave his precious chair. Julia, do you think that leaders in Europe have held up the debt crisis by looking out for their own political interests?
Well, look, these politicians are facing really hard choices and having to ask their population to accept really painful cutbacks. So, yes, they're definitely dragging their feet as much as they can.
What do economists like you do when you look at these changes in Europe and you don't know what the next government is going to do for the economic parts of the debt crisis?
Well, there's so much uncertainty and things have been changing so quickly. I mean, one possibility being talked about in Italy now is taking politics out of it a bit, moving to a technocrat government where basically professional bureaucrats work out a solution.
But don't you then sort of subvert the will of the people?
Yeah, well, yes, of course, the people should have a say in these choices. But often, as we also see in the U.S., when hard choices have to be made, sometimes what we get is political turnover and political stalemates and a lack of progress.
Do you think that as we approach elections here in the U.S. next year, that there's the possibility of a big change either of the presidency or perhaps of the House of Representatives flipping back to the Democrats?
Or perhaps both. I mean, all incumbents are vulnerable when the economy is not doing well. And it's hard to see what's going to, you know, the silver bullet that's going to solve our problems between now and then.
Julia, I want to ask you one more thing. We talk to you every week. Is there any issue outside of Europe and the banks and stuff like that that we haven't talked about that you think is really important for people to think about?
You know, one thing I worry about a lot as an economist is the high rate of unemployment and underemployment amongst young people. And it's something I wish got more policy focus. Right now, you know, the deal really has changed for young people, and we risk losing the potential of a generation if we don't address that.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with BNP Paribas, thanks so much for coming in.
A pleasure.
Well, as Europe's debt crisis sent global markets on a roller coaster ride in recent months, many investors just got out of the way so they wouldn't lose their money. Not Warren Buffett, though. His company, Berkshire Hathaway, says it invested nearly $24 billion last quarter. That was the most in at least 15 years. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Warren Buffett is what's called a value investor. Jim Angel teaches finance at Georgetown.
He likes to buy companies that have a strong franchise, or what the strategy types would call a sustainable competitive advantage.
Translation, companies that don't face much competition. Last quarter, he bought a big stake in MasterCard. He owns a lot of Coca-Cola stock, Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. Angel says Buffett is really good at buying low.
He made a big bet on Bank of America.
A $5 billion bet back in August. The financial firm is still struggling and we'll see what happens to it. But Angel says that epitomizes Buffett's investment strategy, which is pretty basic.
They need money. They're cheap. I'll buy some.
Buffett doesn't always bat a thousand. Who does? But the 81-year-old investor has a pretty good track record. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Best Buy today said it's going to pay $1.3 billion to buy out its British partner in a mobile phone business, and it's giving up on its plans to open superstores in Europe and Asia.
Meanwhile, Steve, the latest $10 increase on airline fares appears to have been grounded. U.S. Airways last week tried to bump up prices by $10, which I think would be like the 11th or 12th price increase this year.
Yeah.
But when no one else matched them, the idea was dropped.
Ah, free market. There you go. We've got more numbers at our website, marketplace.org.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
To another big story now happening overseas. Things are drying out in Thailand, but because of the geography there, Floodwaters are still flowing from the countryside into the capital city of Bangkok. And today, more than a third of that city's districts are now under some sort of evacuation order. Flooding could last for a couple more weeks there, further disrupting the world's supply chain. The BBC's Rachel Harvey is in Bangkok, and she has the latest for us now. Hey, Rachel.
Hello there.
How much more damage can two more weeks of flooding create?
It could create quite a lot more damage, because the longer these floods persist, the longer this crisis goes on, then the more, both in terms of human damage but also economic damage, this is causing. There is the threat to another bunch of factories. That means potentially more workers that are going to be temporarily out of work. So the longer this goes on, the worse it seems to get.
A lot of people didn't realize, Rachel, that Thailand was such a key manufacturing base. Where does Thailand sit in the global supply chain?
It is a key point of transit for both computer parts, hard drives in particular, but also auto parts. It supplies other parts of the world, but it also has assembly plants here. So in both cases in the auto industry, but also the parts shortage is causing big problems much further afield. In the United States and in Europe, for instance, Honda has had to cut production. Same with computer hard drives. Looking ahead towards the Christmas rush, there are already worries that they're just not going to be able to get the kind of parts that they will need. So it is a crucial hub in this region, not just for Asia, but much further afield.
The BBC's Rachel Harvey in Bangkok. Rachel, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, the news that the Greek prime minister is on his way out of office is directly related to the plan he had originally hailed and then scrapped, plans for a public vote on the country's big budget cuts.
Well, the U.S., as you know, Jeremy, is racked with a lot of debt.
Sure.
Could a national referendum on big budget cuts happen here stateside? Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan is with us now to talk about that. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
All right, so the Greek prime minister is on the verge of stepping down, and of course he scrapped his plan last week for a national referendum on those big government cuts. What about here at home? I mean, couldn't we just forget about all this super committee stuff in the Congress and just go directly to the people?
Well, there are only two minor problems with this, Steve.
Okay, give them to me.
The first one is, what question exactly would you ask them to vote yes or no on, which, you know, is not clear. And the second thing is, how would you conduct a referendum, since we've never had one in the United States? How would you do it?
A national referendum for everybody across the country.
Sure. Okay. Well, as soon as you've set up all the voting systems, let me know. At least in Greece, there is at least some understanding of what it is the government is proposing to do, and you can vote, and forgive my Greek pronunciations, Ne or ohi.
Oh, very well. That's good.
Well, all I need is 10,000 more words, and I can become Greek.
By the way, he said yes or no.
It's so hard here because there are so many different opinions, and if I asked you to say in 20 words or less, what is it you're asking people in the United States to say yes or no on, I couldn't do it. I don't think you could do it.
What does this say to you, Alan, the fact that we're having so much trouble just articulating this? What does this say to you about our political situation today?
Well, it says our political situation is a mess. Of course, it's always a mess, but now it's messier than ever because everything here is now so divisive and so bizarre. You know, they're speaking different languages. We might have to have three or four different language versions of our question if we ever can figure out what it was.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan in New York. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
Well, Steve, Alan, you've heard of car companies teaming up with brands like Eddie Bauer or Gucci,
yeah,
brands that appeal to certain customers. Well, today comes the launch of an unusual pairing. Jeep is launching the limited edition Wrangler Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, Steve, to coincide with the launch of the new video game of the same name.
Yeah.
Now, the new Jeep will have Call of Duty logos on the seats and the front fenders. It's being marketed as the toughest vehicle in the world, any world.
Any world.
Now, I hope that these drivers don't think that they can just go around and hit mailboxes and, you know, break things and shoot up whatever, because it is a real car. I will say it's going to be slightly embarrassing when this Wrangler Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 edition, like, gets a flat tire or gets stuck in the snow or something that mere mortal cars do. But then I guess it's going to be AAA that has the Call of Duty.
Yeah, AAA's Call of Duty. There you go. morning, Barnes & Noble is expected to launch a new version of its Nook e-reader to compete with the Kindle Fire and, of course, the Apple iPad. It's Barnes & Noble's latest attempt to avoid the fate of ex-rival Borders.
Well, for an independent take on this, we're joined now by Nancy Bass Wyden. She owns the Strand Bookstore here in New York, which is one of the world's largest used bookstores. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I want to start by asking you to be a representative of the book industry and tell me a question that I've been wondering about for a while. Why has Barnes & Noble survived and Borders gone out of business?
I think a lot of it has to do with management. We've hired a lot of employees, and so I've gotten a lot of inside information on that. And Barnes & Noble's came in very aggressively with the e-books and developing the Nook and devoting space to the Nook.
Well, you haven't gone the e-reader route, right?
We have not. There's really not opportunity for independent bookstores to aggressively go the e-reader Nook. I think Amazon and Barnes & Noble just really have all the market. Anything that's left for us through Google Books seems to be crumbs. But that's really not our gig.
Well, how's business for you?
Business for us is doing great. In-store is up 8%. You know, I really believe that people don't want to be tethered to their devices at home, and they'll always seek a place or shopping experience with a community of book lovers.
Quick lightning round. Do you have a Kindle, an iPad, or a Nook?
I have an iPad.
Okay. And do you read books on it, or is it too hard with the backlighting?
I don't like it.
Favorite book of the year?
I love Mark Twain's autobiography.
What would your advice be to Barnes & Noble to stay afloat? No?
I don't know. I've never been asked that question. I mean, I think that they have all these stores. They have the Nook. I would say that they should go after, you know, recommendations. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're at the Strand. You walk in the store and we have such educated book lovers. Almost everybody's majored in literature at the Strand. I want Barnes & Noble to stay afloat because I want more people to read books, whether they're buying them from the Strand or from anywhere. That would make me happy.
Nancy Bass Wyden is owner of the Strand Bookstore in New York. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, Nancy and Jeremy, Mark Zuckerberg is back at Harvard today for the first time since he dropped out of school. And apparently the Facebook founder has some regrets, as reporter Kurt Nickisch from station WBUR explains.
Mark Zuckerberg cooked up his social networking website in his Harvard dorm room, but went on to build his company in Silicon Valley. So recently, a bunch of Valley entrepreneurs did a double take when they heard him say this.
Honestly, if I were starting now, I just would have stayed in Boston.
Zuckerberg was really complimenting Boston on the loyalty I think we all have here.
That's Jason Ivanish, a 26-year-old entrepreneur in Boston, where tech workers stay with their companies longer. In Silicon Valley, software developers hop from job to job for the best offer, and that turnover makes it harder for companies to grow. So Zuckerberg is back in Boston to recruit.
We all feel a little bit vindicated.
Katie Ray runs a tech startup accelerator here, but in some ways she wishes Boston were more like Silicon Valley.
What's been missing in Boston has been this like massive turnover and learning opportunities.
Learning opportunities that come from moving quickly onto the next challenge, even though tech companies would rather their workers stay put. In Boston, I'm Kurt Nickisch for Marketplace.
And now one last note about Greece. Some rather interesting data has been revealed by a Greek economist named, Steve, can you help me out with his name?
Heracles Polemarchakis. Heracles Polemarchakis. 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 There we
okay.
go. All right.
Well, according to his research, as of a couple of years back, there were more Porsche Cayenne SUVs registered in the country than taxpayers declaring an income of 50,000 euros or more, which is just a bit more than the price of the car.
Well, in today's Midday Extra, we ask, how are there so many Porsches in Greece? Here to talk with us about that is a reporter from the Athens News, Kostas Papakliminsos. Tikanis Kostas, hello.
Hello. I think on this one he's a little bit exaggerating because according to a recent statement that I found of the Greek finance minister, Evangelos Venizelos, there are 160,000 Greeks with a declared income of more than 50,000 euros per year. So I don't think the number of the owners of Porsche Cayenne is bigger than that. I would have witnessed it on the streets if there were more than 160,000 Cayenne around me.
But tell us about this town of Larissa, though. There is a town that has quite a few of them.
Yeah, well, Larissa is the capital of the prefecture of Thessaly. It's in central Greece, and it's mainly an agricultural region. The top profession of their inhabitants is the deal with the agricultural farmers. And I have to tell you that I cannot confirm the data that Polemarchakis is mentioning, but for sure, for the past many years, we have witnessed the rise in the numbers of not only Porsche Cayennes, but generally speaking, highly priced SUVs in the Greek periphery, in the villages, in the where farmers inhabit, because it's like a symbol of power, a symbol of wealth. It has been seen as such by many Greeks for the past years.
Where did this come from, Kostas? Do you think it was they're trying to emulate maybe Americans or further west or what?
I'll tell you where this money comes from. Well, for the past 10 years that Greece has been a member of the Eurozone, there's a lot of cheap money coming in the country, meaning since the Greek the interest rates to borrow Greece was from 2001 quite similar to the ones that you could borrow Germany, for example. It was close to 3%. Many institutions, banks, funds were more than willing to lend Greece. It seemed like a safe haven since it was a member of the Eurozone. So cheap money poured in, and the banks also poured cheap money into consumption, let's say. So this had a spiral effect that we're witnessing right now, that the country is on the brink of collapse.
Well, why does everybody want a Porsche or a big SUV?
Well, I told you before. First of all, the banks provided people cheap loans to make. I even myself recall 7 or 8 years ago seeing TV commercials or get a loan for your vacations, get a loan for your studies, get a loan for your house, get a loan for actually everything at a very low interest rate. So banks lured people to get money in order to consume. Now, the SUV is a symbol of the wealth and a symbol of power. If you're in a quite poor area and all of a sudden you drive around with a Porsche Cayenne or, I don't know, with another luxury car, then people will know that you're well off.
I don't know, Jeremy. This sounds a whole lot like any place in the United States.
Yeah, really.
Well, you could say that. I would agree with that statement. I would more than agree. Man, if you go 20 years back, the interest rate that Greece was getting money from the international markets was 11, 12, even 13%. And then all of a sudden it dropped to 3% because of our membership in the Eurozone.
Hey, by the way, here in the U.S., we have a lot of big SUVs, but our gas prices are relatively cheap compared to in Europe. What does it cost to fill up your tank with gas in Greece?
Well, right now the prices have gone up. The price of 1 liter of unleaded gas is 1.7 euros.
And a lot of money, I'm sure, to fill up the tanks. Kostas, interesting stuff. There in Greece, and we hope everything goes well with
those SUVs.
Yeah, with all the SUVs and with the change of power and all of that, and we wish you luck in the debt crisis as well.
Thank you very much.
Yasu Kostas. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And finally, Jeremy, we're going to get the latest reading on how much debt consumers are taking on. The Fed's going to release that today. Apparently, some of that debt is for clothes and shoes.
Yeah.
The website called Bundle did a little analysis on shopaholics. And by shopaholics, they mean the people who buy the most clothing, shoes, and other items that we wear. The study looks at which U.S. cities are the biggest for those shoppers.
Hmm.
You want to know?
Absolutely.
Bakersfield, California came in at number 10. By the way.
Okay, that doesn't totally surprise me.
No.
I feel like, you know,
oh, really?
L.A., yeah. Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, well, L.A.'s in the top 20.
Okay.
Seattle ranked number 8.
Wow.
Dallas at number 5.
Uh-huh.
Nashville, Tennessee, Came in third. Maybe they're buying some
the LA of the Mid South.
Oh, you love Nashville, don't you? Since you spent so much time in Tennessee for that one series of reporting.
That's right.
You love Tennessee.
And hey, they think they're the Hollywood of the South. And they probably are.
I've been to Nashville many times. I know. Yeah. Trust me. Who is number one, Jeremy?
Beverly Hills.
No. Think you used to live there. I'll give you a hint.
Washington.
There you go. You got it.
Really?
I feel like Stefan Richter. We need a bell in the studio. The average resident, Jeremy, spends $263 a month on wearable items, clothing, shoes, and other things that you put on. That, of course, means you can look out for some sharp-dressed lobbyists walking around K Street because they are probably dressed to the gills, I'm sure. By the way, we have...
Don't be so sure.
No, you're right. I've seen Jack Abramoff's hat, so...
Yeah, those hats are. I don't know where that came from.
Check out the full list at marketplace.org, and you can see all the cities that made that list. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.